Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarn in Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre callings on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text a brother and you can also check out our Facebook page as well, BBM 98.7 FM. And see all their photos and our podcasts as well. Jump straight into it. We're going to talk to beautiful Leah Cameron from Murrow Law, and founder and principal of, and solicitor at Murrow Law, and talk about COVID-19, sackings and unfair dismissals. Yeah, very important conversation. Leah, there, good morning.
Good morning, Trev. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
I'm expecting you in the studio here this morning, sister.
I know, I'm absolutely swamped, so I'm chained to the desk this morning.
Under the pump.
I'll be sure to be there in person soon.
Lovely, sounds good. Thank you very much. Let the mob know who you mob, where you from.
Yeah, look, I'm a Palawa woman from Tasmania. But currently I'm stuck in Cairns. I can't even go home to see my mob. So it's been, 8 months since I've seen them, and I'm missing them all like crazy. So,
and look, when we're with our mob, we get our energy to continue our life. And so, yeah, you must be feeling a little bit flat, my sister.
I sure am. I'll be there soon, though. Hanging out.
All right, fantastic. Now, topic today, COVID-19 sackings and unfair dismissals. So bring us into the conversation in regarding the intro of this topic, please.
Sure. So obviously COVID has had a really significant impact on businesses and their staff members. And lots of businesses have been forced to close because of restrictions. And lots of people have lost their jobs. So what the statistics are saying is that since the lockdown started in March, unfair dismissal claims have soared by 35% across Australia. So that's huge.
Whoa.
Uptick there.
Mm.
And so there's, I don't know if people have seen on social media, there's been a lot of talk about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people being more affected by the unfair dismissals than anyone else. And they've been unfairly sacked. And the reason why is they're saying it's around, health precautions to justify the dismissals, and the particular vulnerability of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and our health condition in general is usually less than that. The general public, so that's why they're putting it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fair Work Commission and state human rights commissions, or their equivalent, have actually been investigating employees over allegations that employees were required to declare their Indigenous status and where they were stood down for identifying as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. Unfairly dismissing them. And people are also making complaints around discrimination on the basis of their race,
yes,
or their age sometimes, or pregnancy status as well can also be one.
So what is unfair dismissal?
That's a really good question. So under the Fair Work Act, a dismissal is unfair if the employer terminates the employment in a way that's considered harsh, unjust or unreasonable, or not a genuine redundancy. So the good news is if you believe you have been unfairly dismissed and meet those criteria, you can make an application to the Fair Work Commission. But the crucial thing is you need to do it within 21 days of being dismissed.
Okay.
And it starts the day after you were laid off.
Okay.
So
what you're saying is for, because employees probably wouldn't know what unfair dismissal is. You know, I mean, like the boss says, you're no longer required here. Well, you're thinking, oh, I can. So what you're saying is each individual, we should question it. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the difficulty with the time period is, if you've been laid off, it's an upsetting, traumatic thing. You're probably scrambling to work out what to do. You know, you might not be thinking, wow, I should phone the Fair Work Commissioner to sort of look at this matter within 21 days. You know, you're scrambling to get further employment or do what you need to do, or you might be, you know, very upset or depressed. All those sorts of things can happen. But it is really important if people know that someone's been laid off or they've been laid off, if they want to look at that option. I must also say, though, there is a minimum employment period that you will need to meet to apply for unfair dismissal.
Okay.
You need to have been employed for at least six months or for at least 12 months if you've been working for a small business. So, you know, a lot of small businesses have laid off a lot of staff, so there is those different periods of time. And
sure.
When you've completed the application, the Fair Work Commission will deal with it and work through the process with you. So some of the things that you can seek through your application for unfair dismissal is that you can ask to be reinstated, so ask to continue your employment. Obviously, that's not always likely.
Well, as you say, it's sometimes not good. You're going sort of jumping back in the lion's den, so to speak, you know? Well, if I'm not wanted here, what do you want me back for, you know?
That's right.
And
that's
you were forced to take me back.
That's it.
Exactly.
But, you know, you can understand with some people, they're like, well, that might be the only job they can get in the town they live in, or all those sorts of situations. So it does happen. Then you can sometimes ask for compensation, which is capped at 26 weeks' wage of the annual wage of the employee.
Mm-hmm.
And the maximum amount you can currently award is about $74,000. So just some parameters around that as well.
So compensation, in the sense that you don't have to go back, but you can get compensated for being dismissed and take that amount of money, the max in there, $74,000.
Yeah, that's it. So that's the maximum. That's right. So, look, once you've made that application for unfair dismissal, the Fair Work Commission checks out the application, makes sure it's valid. They let your employer know and they serve them with the application. And then they'll deal with the dispute, you know, going to and fro between the parties. And in some cases, they hold a conciliation conference, and it's trying to help both parties reach an agreement. Look, if it's unsuccessful, they issue a certificate, and then they do need to decide whether the dispute is referred to what's known as arbitration. Look, if they don't agree to the arbitration, the employee can then make an application to the court to deal with the matter. But, you know, the intent is always for the parties to try and reach agreement as much as possible, because obviously going to court is a very expensive process for everyone, and, you know, doesn't always get best results.
And the mental strain, emotion that goes with it as well.
Exactly. So really important. So look, if you think you have been unfairly dismissed, you should contact the Fair Work Commission as soon as possible, as we highlighted. And their number is 1-300-799-675.
The number again, 1-300-799-675, yep.
That's the one, Trev. And look, if you have other queries in relation to racial discrimination, all those sorts of things, you can contact the Human Rights Commission in your state, your local law society or community legal aid centres as well. They're very good help.
You are protected, is what we're saying.
That's it. That's right.
Oh, fantastic. And who's Marua Law?
Marua Law, Trev, is an Indigenous legal firm. We specialise in commercial and Indigenous law. We're staffed with amazing Indigenous lawyers who do work all across the country, actually. We have clients everywhere. But even if we can't help you with your particular query, give us a call and we'll see if we can refer you to someone else who can.
Nothing beats black on black, hey, sister?
That's it.
Good talking with you, Leah. Thank you so very much. You take care.
No worries. Thanks, Trev. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. a beautiful yarn there with Leah Cameron, our founder and principal solicitor at Murrah Law. And look, fantastic topic there, COVID-19 sackings and unfair dismissals. So whenever you're laid off or put off, and if you've worked over 6 months and you're feeling uneasy about it, and was it the right thing to do in regard to your employer doing that, you are protected. It's was Leah was saying, it's very important to ask the question. You know, and you can find out if you were unfair, if it was an unfair dismissal or an unlawful termination. So, yeah, rights are there. Have you say, Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Yarn with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumby Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416. Where my brother at? Here's Brother Nation. Where my people at?
Forgive me for the sins, all the days I've been putting next with the sins, smoking weed where it's been. Drunk when the week start, drunk to the week. Check the condition from my mission bad, and I don't pretend to fake moves. I'm from the old school cool, that's how I'll be with energy deadly to get me out of this hell. Rock melodies heavenly with a story to tell. That devil tried put death on me, I'm paying the penalty when I'm without my family. Insanity surrounding me, I must find a remedy for me. It's H-I-P, H-O-P, not O-P-P, other people property. I'm no thief, I got beat when police give key. When I walk city streets and all I seek is peace, love, harmony, funky beats and freeze. You wanna mess with me, I'll kick your heart and your teeth. On FB, gotta deal with this pain and this grief. Gotta turn a new leaf, cause my life is brief. Take my son, my daughter, my nephew and my niece of that R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Don't see me boy, where's my people right now? We dying economically, we dying in poverty. Singing huh, what you wanna do right now? Climb economically and find black sovereignty. Yo, everyday people, everyday is a struggle. Come to make a stand, put some muscle and hustle. The struggle is the trouble that we face every day. We'll just face the pain and more strength to gain. Singing marijuana's me, then I'll help in my breed. We'll still stick in the missions where diabetes and high blood pressure, lung cancer. My people died early from that, I had no chance to hunt with them, chuck a line with them. Then I gulling up the scrub and shoot a white pigeon. Now boom, boom, go to fortune, dropping two scrub in. Show it off into my car, singing him again. How'd you do that? Where'd you get that way and shoot that bird? International park after dark, are y'all aware? Bed, 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 the bed is the way. But I'm still tripping on the streets in the southern suburbs. I'm singing war, where's my people right now? We dying economically, we dying in poverty. Singing huh, what you wanna do right now? Climb economically and find blacks over Neo. Everyday people, everyday is a struggle. Time to make a stand, flex a muscle and hustle. The struggle is the trouble that we face every day. We'll just face the pain and more strength we gain. I'm singing war, where's my people right now? We dying economically, we dying in poverty. Singing huh, what you wanna do right now? Climb economically and find blacks over Neo. Everyday people, everyday is a struggle. Time to make a stand, flex a muscle and hustle. The struggle is the trouble that we face every day. We just face the pain and more strength gain. Looking out of spiritual vibes I get when I smoke split, I spit smoky dope lyric. Indigenous spirit, I make the devil fear it. Nobody used to deal it, but now I'm on the real wall. Legit path to get the cash is blast. The witches being vicious, eating cuisine. Vicious, delicious, delicious, ambitious to cry. The cash with breeze, random wishes for families. Indigenous set them free, I'm in God's army. A secret agent, waking up drunk, brother sleeping on the pavement. I'm a peaceful man, you don't wanna see me vagrant. I'll tear up the slang, cause black Australia be sacred to me. Half white, half Maori, I got educated, never was, it's been a gory. In a hurry, I get mine, blow up like a mine. Let the world know I'm a product of the Dreamtime floor. Where's my people right now? We dying economically, we dying in poverty. Singing huh, what you wanna do right now? Climb economically and find blacks over the ocean. Everyday people, everyday is a struggle. Time to make a stand, flex the muscle and hustle. The struggle is the trouble that we face every day. We'll just face the pain and more strength we gain. We'll just face the pain and more strength we gain.
The Healing Foundation is a national Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisation. We partner with communities to address the ongoing trauma caused to the Stolen Generations. Right now, we want young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders aged 18 to 35 to join our youth reference group. You'll work on intergenerational healing and also learn skills that will make a difference to people's lives. Applications close August 29 at healingfoundation.org.au.
Station sponsor.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I
remember the day. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and it's a voice for our people. So do utilise it. Call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. And like I said, a voice for our people, so do utilise it. We're going to catch up a yarn there with a beautiful lady by the name of Susan Smith. She's the author of the book, The Altar Boys. Now, Susan Smith is a six-time Walkley Award and two-time Logie Award-winning journalist. Her 27-year history in journalism includes senior editorial roles at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, including on foreign correspondence, background briefing, Radio National, ABC News and Radio Current Affairs. She was a senior investigator reporter and producer at the Late Line on ABC, reporting stories on the cover-up of the clerical abuse, which helped trigger the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse in Australia. She has also written for Crikey and The Australian and held various roles in the commercial media. Bit of a whistleblower on the line. Susan, very good morning. How are you, sister?
Good morning, Trev, and that's very kind of you. And can I do a shout-out to my Cape York mob?
Yes.
The bummer up there that I worked with from 1994 to 1997, I worked at the Upper Nip and the Cape York Health Council.
Okay.
And my sister Lillian Simpson might be listening to this up at Corowa in Kuranda, so...
Beautiful.
I'm very, very attached to the mob up there.
Oh, fantastic.
Great work, Bummer Bipra.
Oh, thank you very much. Fantastic. Look, it's a voice for our people, and look, your chapter in your life was working up there with our mob, and fantastic, and made some good connections. Look,
and
the topic...
Willie Gordon.
Yeah, Willie Gordon, yeah, beautiful, yeah.
He was the chair, and it was... And we used to go and lobby Paul Keating, the Prime Minister.
The there you go. Straight to the top.
Yeah.
We're talking about your new book, The Altar Boys, and to our daily listeners out there, just take on board that we'll be talking about suicide, unfortunately, and that's what the story is about, The Altar Boys. Talk about Glenn Walsh and Stephen Allwood, who are no longer with us in spirit, but they were two brothers. Tell us the story, is where the book came from, yep?
Yeah, so Stephen Allwood was my good friend. He was my boss at the ABC when I was in my 20s and 30s, and we were at the ABC together. And he grew up in this place called Shortland. It was a very Catholic neighbourhood in Newcastle, which I don't know if your mob knows where Newcastle is, but it's about 3 hours north of Sydney, and he lived there. And across the road was another...
You just
boy.
Talk rugby league. When we say Newcastle Knights, yeah, they know where Newcastle is.
Oh, they know where it is, yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so Glenn Walsh lived across the road, and Stephen became a really great journalist, and I worked with him at the ABC, and Glenn Walsh became a priest.
Mm.
And off they went, and... Glenn Walsh, as a priest, did an amazing thing, which rarely happens. He dobbed in a fellow priest who was sexually assaulting boys to the police. Now, this rarely happened back in 2004.
Mm.
And from that moment on, he was ostracised from his fellow priest, because what he did was he went against his church law and he...
The Catholic Brotherhood, so to speak.
You're not allowed to do. The bishop's the only person that can go to... Anyway... Eventually, Glenn becomes a Crown prosecution witness in a trial, in a criminal trial, against an archbishop. So I don't know how many of you guys are Catholic or former Catholics, but, you know, the priest is down the bottom, and then you've got a bishop, and then you've got an archbishop, and then you've got the Pope. And so Glenn ended up having to give evidence against an archbishop, and that's just not heard of, Trip. That's
sure.
Like around the world anyway.
Well, like you said, a whistleblower. He became a whistleblower.
He became a whistleblower because he'd done the right thing. He knew these two boys that had been abused by this horrible priest. Anyway, 2 weeks before the trial where he's got to give evidence, he suicides.
Okay.
And my friend who grew up with him, Stephen, gets in contact with me and says, "Suze, I knew Glenn. he was really badly bullied by the clergy. You really should investigate his death. And I thought, well, that's an interesting story. I'll do that story. But it was sort of November, December. I had planned a trip to Hawaii, so I went to Hawaii. Stephen, my friend, who grew up with this priest, said, look, I'm going off to South America. So we agreed we would meet in January. But, Trev, when I got in touch with my friend Stephen in January, he'd suicided. And I thought, what is going on here? And then I find out through my research that up to 70 men in their 40s and 50s and 60s who went to three Catholic schools in Newcastle have all suicided. And I got onto this fantastic group up there called the Clergy Abuse Network. All the survivors belonged to it. And they told me they were keeping a register and that there was, like now 69 men. And my friends Stephen and Glenn were part of that. So it's collateral damage, you know, in all the generations of what's happened to these poor boys.
And look at this story be told, and this why you wrote the book. And unfortunately, people have lost their lives because of it. But the truth needs to get out to protect all our boys out there. You know, in this situation,
yeah,
also bring to account to the forefront the so-called priests and the yucky stuff that they did.
So what I found out too, Trev, which was very interesting. So Father Glenn Walsh, in 2004, Dobbs in this priest who's been sexually assaulting boys. But it wasn't until 2015 when he becomes a Crown Prosecution witness in a trial against an archbishop who should have reported what he knew to the police, this archbishop. He's been acquitted now, so I can't really say much about that. But anyway, so in 2015, Glenn, this priest, has to give evidence against his superior. But curiously, like in February the next year, Pope Francis recalls him to Rome, this priest, and Glenn tells five of his confidants and his former lawyer and friends that the Pope asked him what he was going to say in the trial. Now, you know, that's very, you're not supposed to
exactly
question witnesses about that.
Opportunity to cover it up.
And then in 2017, the trial's supposed to begin sort of the middle of November 2017. At the end of October, Glenn's in his house in Newcastle and the bishop comes to visit him and basically says, you're not welcome here, you have to leave, we'll try and find you something overseas. And, you know, within a week, Glenn suicides.
Yeah.
That bishop went to visit him. So the bishop gives priests their houses and looks after them. That's part of the deal, right? So
you're out in the cold. See you later.
You know,
shut your mouth.
You have to leave on the 27th. Then, curiously as well, like 3 weeks before the trial, when Glenn was about in his 30s, I think, in 1998 anyway, he put in a complaint against a Marist brother. So when he left school, Glenn decided he wanted to be a Marist brother. So he went to the training centre for Marist brothers, which is the novitiate. But unfortunately, a very senior Marist brother sexually assaulted him for a year when he was a young adult. Later in 1998, many years later, Glenn puts in a complaint to the Marist brothers about his abuse. And in 1999, the Marist brothers say, no, we don't believe you, it's not sustained. But then curiously, Trev, within a month or two of the trial in 2017, when Glenn's got to give evidence against a senior church official, the Marist brothers say, oh no, we've looked at your complaint again and we think it's true and we want to do like a legal chat with you. Now, if you've been a survivor of abuse, you know that those sort of things bring up terrible trauma.
Of course. And
shame and everything. So why
walking back through
then?
through the trauma mentally.
That's right. Why did they raise it then? So he's got the bishop saying he can't be in the diocese anymore, he's not welcome. He's got the Marist brothers saying we're going to look at this claim. He's got this huge trial coming up with the media on his back. And he's had the Pope. And I mean, the book goes into a lot more, but what his family want and what the survivors in Newcastle, we want to know. What happened to Father Glenn Walsh?
Yes.
He was a good man.
Yes.
He tried to change his culture from the inside. He was a good man. You know, why? What happened to him? So we understand what's going on with this culture, you know?
Can everybody speak for Glenn now? I mean, the book speaks for Glenn and Brother Stephen. Are they survived by family? Family members?
Yeah, the family are
siblings,
all involved.
Yep.
And the family have given me all their letters and emails and things.
Yep.
But I wrote it, you know, it's really sad, Trev, because I was very close to Stephen and that made it very hard for me to write.
Mm.
But I felt like he was like a journalist who used to give journalist stories like an editor. And I feel like he's given me my last story to write.
Mm.
And I've written his story. And if we can save some more boys and men with this book, I think it would be good, you know.
Let the truth be told.
Absolutely. Mm. Truth. The truth sets us free, Trev, doesn't it?
It does, you know. And like I said, well, we as First Nation people, in regard to how we travel through life and what have you, Australia's got a history, you know, good or bad, black or white, the history is a history. And if this is history in regard to the Catholic Church, then so be it. Bring it forefront. I mean,
that's right.
Do you really live by the Bible? You know what I mean? If the Bible is the ultimate
that's
book,
right.
You know, if the Bible is
the
ultimate, exactly,
the truth is the life,
exactly.
Right.
You know,
and Aboriginal people know about story.
Yep, exactly.
What the story is, and mm-hmm. this is a very important story. And I start the book about how the British invaded Newcastle and brought British mm-hmm. culture, which was very mean and punitive, and the mm-hmm. convicts and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
And I feel like there's all these amazing people that are part of this story. You know, and
exactly.
we're all together, and we want to be the voice of these 69 men who have died. You know,
for sure. Now, your book, The Altar Boys, is out and about now. People can purchase it.
Yep.
How can they get their hands
on
the book?
What are the bookshops in Cairns these days?
Okay, there you go. That's right. We are not hillbillies up here. We are in the 21st century. Yes, but you can also get the book online as well.
Oh yeah. Just go to Booktopia.
Yep.
Or it's The Altar Boys, published by ABC Books or HarperCollins, or you can go and do the audio book if you prefer to listen to it on Audible.
Yes.
And also I have a Facebook site, Suzanne Smith. If you lock me up, I can talk to you if you need.
So the book also, like I said, it tells the story of the two men, Glenn Walsh and Stephen Allwood, and sad as they are no longer with us in spirit because of suicide, as I mentioned to the listeners at their Lifeline 13114 for crisis support and suicide prevention if you need help. But the book also helps soothe people in regard to the support of what they're going through, if that is the case. So it is a medicine, so to speak, in regard to helping our soul and our thoughts in regard to this yucky world in that degree for abuse, sexual abuse, yes?
That's right. And I've learnt a lot from my Aboriginal friends about all this too.
Beautiful, Susan. Thank you, my sister, for sharing. Listen, all the best to you and your family.
Thank you so much.
We are in COVID-19, but this book needs to be read, need to be out there, and protect our boys and our men out there. Thank you very much, Susan. You take care, and we'll talk soon, my sister, right?
Yeah, you
too. Bye-bye. Dudley Young there with author Susan Smith, author of the book, her latest book, The Altar Boys. Bit of a whistleblower she is, but looks strong in spirit, and talking for Glenn Walsh and Stephen Allwood, who both committed suicide because of their sexual abuse while in church, Catholic Church. So the story is there. Read the book. And also to our daily mob out there, Lifeline 13114, Crisis Support, Suicide Prevention. If you're having some bad thoughts, please make that phone call. And the support and help is there for you. But this story needs to be told, and all stories need to be told. The truth sets us free, as Susan mentioned. Have your say, your mob. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. All ears here for your daily yarn. 1-800-422-416.
Up in the sky, so far away, there is a place for everyone. Moon and the stars, they always shine out on that ocean way. And as the lazy wave rolled by, breezes blowing memories, oh yes, yes. Somewhere there's joy, somewhere there's sorrow. Out on the sea, it's always the same to me.
Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild Whang-eyed tree goes. Are you from Torres Strait? Any place including St. Paul Way? Any place and just around by Mabio Bay? Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild Whang-eyed tree goes. Are you from Torres Strait? Any place including St. Paul Way? Any place and just around by Mabio Bay? Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too.
Hey, what get on your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakuri, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, we are still in the pandemic of COVID-19, and the only vaccine we got is the rules we need to abide by, and that's, you know, washing hands, constantly staying away from each other, 1.5 metres socially distance. That's what we need to do. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Dr. John Bradley, Associate Professor, Deputy Director as well of Monash Indigenous Studies Centre, and talk about the Indigenous perspective on Australia's history of pandemics, which provide a context for COVID-19. On the line, Dr. John, very good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Good morning to you too.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Thinking of you guys there in Victoria and how you're operating with the shutdown second wave. But it's the world that we're living in at the moment, isn't it, Doctor?
Absolutely. And we just got to all hope we come through it well. Exactly.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, topic today, Indigenous perspective on Australia's history or pandemic provides context for COVID-19. Look, we're doing our bit in regard to First Nation people, protecting our elders and our mob. But when you're talking about perspective, Australia's history, a lot of our mob have been through pandemics and survived, yes?
Well, yeah. Look, I think this is a thing we often don't think about. You know, if I just go back a little bit, you know, I think in the early days of this discussion about COVID, you know, politicians and other people that don't know much about Indigenous people were doom and gloom. They, you know, they were thinking that these remote Indigenous communities were places of little hope and all these kinds of things. Sure. Now, you know, I've been working at Fo'olulu, where I'm really talking about, for the last 40 years, and they'd been through two pandemics. One was the Spanish flu, the other was the Hong Kong flu in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. They saw the damage that that caused to their old people and their young people. So this time around, you know, I remember an 85-year-old lady saying, it's not going to happen this time. And they, through their own knowledge of kinship, their own families, they protected each other and disciplined each other all the way through those early days of the COVID crisis in Australia.
Well, I know with our First Nation communities, a lot of the mayors shut off the communities from outsiders and even sent some of the elders out to outer stations and to, you know, to smaller communities there in the area. So they were protecting the elders and they've done a great job.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you think of these elders in some of these remote communities, they're the last walking encyclopedias about Australia
exactly.
We have. So they need all the protection that they can get so that they can pass on what needs to be passed on. And I think, you know, we often don't think of people as walking encyclopedias, but, you know, I think of the old people that taught me and those that are still alive. Their heads are so full. And
exactly.
Yeah, they need protecting, absolutely.
Well, when the student is ready, the teacher will arrive, and we've got the teachers there in front of us, and they are our elders, you know, and it's learning from other people's experiences as well, lessons from previous pandemics, as you mentioned, we use as precedents on how to handle COVID-19, so to speak, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, you know, one of the interesting things about this story that we created was back in the old days, you know, the old people thought that these pandemics were actually a part of, you know, Aboriginal law, like part of sorcery and stuff like that. But as they got so used to what was going on and hearing the wider story about how all this works, They just said, hey, this is a white fella business and we're going to have to run with it and we're going to look after ourselves.
Exactly, exactly. And so, like I said, hats off to what they've done, but we are still in the pandemic. There is no vaccine as such. And so, like as I mentioned, the rules and the law is the medicine at the moment.
And it's kinship for these families. You know, they don't want to die. You know, there's enough death in Aboriginal communities and enough disease without creating more. So people, you know, I remember talking to people in Darwin during the writing of this article we wrote. You know, and they were sitting on the lawn outside the hospital and each one of them was 1.4 metres away from each other.
Exactly.
You know, they were a really close family. They just said, nah, we're following the rules. We're not going to die.
Exactly. And it's about keeping it all simple, isn't it? Look, a very important conversation. Thank you very much for sharing, Dr. John. And we just need to abide by the rules of the vaccine we got. All the best to you and your team, your family. Stay warm, stay safe. And we'll yarn soon, Dr. John.
Okay, you take care. Look after yourself.
Bye-bye. Beautiful young Dr. John Bradley, his name, Associate Professor, Deputy Director, Monash Indigenous Studies Centre, and talked about the Indigenous perspective on Australia's history of pandemics, provide context for COVID-19. So researchers find remote Aboriginal community instated public health precautions early on in the pandemic to protect its people. Elders is what I'm talking about. So we've done a fantastic job there. And hats off to the mayors and being strong in regarding protecting in the communities. Those had the means to move to islands and, you know, out of stations, while those that stayed rationed food, restricted alcohol purchases and took care of elderly community members. That's what they've done. So, look, fantastic job, and we are still not out of the woods just yet. We still need to abide by the rules, and if the communities are closed, then they're shut. You know, you can't go enter. And if they're open, then open cautiously, but they're keeping an eye on it. So hats off to the mayors and all the elders out there. Have your say, yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Any topic you want to yarn about, all ears here. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. And we're live in First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. Across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give me a call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
Got no money in my pocket. I don't drive some fancy car. I don't have much to offer. Just me and my old guitar. There's no big house, no nest egg. All our things are second hand. But she tells me she loves me for doing the best I can. We don't need out, we eat in. We wash up and watch TV. I don't spoil her too often. She says that's all right by me. If I could buy her diamonds and roses, would I feel more of a man? When she tells me she loves me for doing the best I can. Rainbows and still drive my rusty ute. I don't spoil her too often. Don't know why she thinks that's cute. There's no big house, no nest egg, and it's hard to understand.
Yeah, deadly track there. Todd Williams doing the best I can. And I hope your mob are doing that. And we don't have to be sick to get better, your mob. And they say by a mile is a trial, by a yard is too hard, but inch by inch is a cinch. But enjoy that journey. That's what it's all about as well. We are in the life of journey. Now, a message, a community announcement there. The Grant Thornton Stolen Wages team, yep. They have announced another round of community support for claimants to the B Law Stolen Wages Settlement Scheme. And I've been yarning with them very closely about this very important stage, stolen wages here in Queensland. There are still several thousand people who haven't seen their correct ID or bank details, account details, since January. So people virtually haven't completed the so-called application for the money to be returned to them. And so they're looking for the correct bank details and the correct ID. So you need to do that to receive your money, your mob. There is a deadline, and that deadline is Friday, 28 August. So here it is, Friday, 28 August, and looking for mob out there to help our elders who may be affected, you know, and to have them complete the application. Please help them out so they can receive their money. There's still a lot of money left outstanding, but take what we can get. Have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. We've got about 12 minutes left on the program. And that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trudy Trev, Murray from McCurry. Your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Now you can text the brother, 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Stay tuned, you mob. Love to be hearing from you. Too deadly. Yeah, Dele Pair, that's the letter stick band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, 1-800-422-416. We've got someone on the line. Very good morning, my brother.
Good morning, dear brother. Thank you, brother, for providing the service, brother. It's part of, I reckon it's part of Are You Okay, dear brother?
Yeah. Thank you.
But I'll try and calm down and talk about the Chief Minister. I'm glad he got his name, Michael Gunner. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that, because...
I'm losing you there, brother. Someone, give me a call back, brother. That's someone there, regular caller. Lost him there. Boris on the phone. There it is. We'll clean it up. Call me back, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the bully one, Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumma Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We got Cross Nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service, a voice for our people, and a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across this country. A beautiful network it is. Stand black, stand tall, stand strong, and we deliver all our yarns and all our communications via the internet and via the airwaves. We'll try again with someone. You there, brother?
Yeah,
lost you, yep.
Anyway, I'll try and calm down and talk about the win for Michael Gunner, brother, Chief Minister. He got back in again.
Mm.
And why I'm really glad that he got back in, because we have our association, our Black people have an association in the ring. You might remember the case of Lorna Kubilla and Peter Gunner. They took the government, they tried to sue the government, but they lost the win for compensation.
Mm.
They were stolen generation. Michael Gunner's grandfather is Peter Gunner. I think three other people ring me up and pick me up where I need to be picked up. But Michael Gunner's grandfather is Peter Gunner's dad, and he supported Peter Gunner during the compo. But I'm just, that's one of the reasons I'm saying him grand, that he got in. But I'm just bringing him on, but this is the reason I choke up, and this is the reason.
Yes.
I'm glad you provided. Sorry, okay. Brent Tarrant was and now there's talk of bringing him back home here, bringing him back to this country.
Mm.
And brother, when you think of cocaine, Kathy was in South America. They wanted to bring him back. Chantal Corbin, she's back, but they wanted to bring him back. And a fellow from Guantanamo Bay, David Hicks, alleged terrorist. I don't know, some kind of business thing, but they brought him back. And he finished his time in Yakla prison. I'm not pissing me off, brother. I'm out, but I choke up. Brother, Russell, serving more, brother. He's been there for 80 years, brother. And he's still there. They never been wrong, brother.
Yes.
Pissing me off. He's still there. And there's another fellow, too, from Morabinda, brother. He's still in prison. And he never done anything. He's escaped over his 25 years. Kevin Henry.
Mm.
And if ever your people... get a chance to listen to the podcast, Amy McGuire, and I forget the other brother. And on the press call back at the Newcastle area, brother, before I had to call out, saw on Facebook, Gary Jubin got a book out, and I'm going to go see that book. And that's the same area where Barrable, that stuff happened to those kids there, brother. And I'd like to say a big shout out to Peter Fox, he's a whistleblower from that area too, brother.
Mm.
Thank you, brother, for allowing me to, and your program for giving us.
And thank you for calling in.
You're not okay, and I come and give a rant, but thank you very much, brother.
Too deadly, brother. Thank you very much. Selwyn, yeah, appreciate that. And people appreciate it being appreciated, and I do appreciate it. So thank you so very much, my brother. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray going to sign off here. I thank you very much for your company, for your time. Back in the hot seat again on Monday. That daily number, 1-800-422-416. But constantly check out our Facebook page, BBM 987 FM. And we've got all our stories, all our yarns, a lot of repeat programs as well, programs you missed. So a very powerful tool. But thank you very much. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And we'll be yarning soon here on your daily program, National Talk Black. And more importantly, let's stay safe, abide by the rules. Pandemic is still upon us, COVID-19, and the medicine we got is abiding by the rules. Too deadly.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
do. You're the reason for things I say. When we're not together, I fall apart. Seems I get lost, all alone in the dark. Can't go on loving if you're not in my heart. You're the reason.